Abner Meres is a world champion boxer, Olympian, sports commentator, and most importantly, dad to two little girls. Beloved by abuelas and hardcore fans alike, Abner is pro at entertaining the world both in and out of the ring. On Blue Wire's new podcast, On the Hook, with Abner, we'll hear from Abner, his family, fellow athletes, and other people who've made him the boxer and the man he is. They chat about topics like the state of boxing, sports, music, culture, and family life. Listen to On the Hook with Abner Meres wherever you get your podcasts. Episodes in English out on Tuesday, episodes in Spanish out on Wednesday.
Blue Wire.
What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to the Brooklyn Buzz. I'm your host, Nick Faye. With me, as always, my co-host, Jack Manuel. Jack, how are we doing?
Nets news.
Yeah, we got some rumors. Obviously, NBA season wrapped up. We've been talking trades. We're going to break it up a little bit. We'll still hit you with another trade pod, but we want to touch on some of their latest Nets stuff. And as always, you can find us on all streaming platforms, including otgbasketball.com and Blue Wire Pods. But Jack, kick things off for us.
Serge Ibaka, Nick, is there a growing chance we see Serge Ibaka head to Brooklyn? We saw him wipe his Insta page. We saw him say nice things about Kevin Durant in January before dropping a video for Bleacher Report, which I put out. And I knew it would create some form of clout, but I didn't expect it to do the reaction that it got. As he said, we're very close. He's like my brother when talking about Kevin Durant. And then he comes out on Twitter himself and responds saying, let's not read too much into it. And he finishes the tweet with hashtag We the North, which is going to make us all very sad. So, look, the doc changed this morning. If we had done this topic yesterday, it would have been like, oh, okay, yeah, something's happening here. But then Serge Ibaka goes and tweets out and makes all Nets fans sad, including myself here down in Melbourne.
Yeah, I'm not really too sad about it because I never had gotten my hopes up because I've just always thought it was kind of like a pipe dream, just given how much money he could make, where he's at in his career, being 31 years old. You probably want to get that last good contract. The Nets not having any cap space and being over the tax, they can't even really complete a sign and trade unless they were able to kind of manipulate some stuff. I mean, the only way I could really see the Nets making a move for Serge Ibaka in the offseason, I mentioned to you this off air, would be if the Nets got under the tax, got the full mid-level exception, were able to offer that to Serge Ibaka, because that seems like the number that's going to be floating around for free agency, given no one knows what to expect with the revenue for 2021.
Yeah, it seems to me he loves Toronto. He loves his teammates there. They're going to be contending as well, like the Brooklyn Nets will be. The thing that's going to draw him to Brooklyn is if his relationship with Kevin Durant is so great and he thinks that the chances of the Nets winning a championship and they can provide him at least a similar compensation, because, you know, like you said, he's in his early 30s. This might be the last decent enough contract that he gets. Maybe he does sign a one-year inflated deal.
That's what I was going to say. Maybe he does sign the one-year deal and takes the pay cut for this year, knowing that he could get that big payday in 2021. I wouldn't rule it out completely, but the Nets definitely don't have things in their favor unless they make some type of move. Or maybe it's a point where he re-signs with Toronto. Toronto kind of sucks next year, and they want to make a trade at the deadline, which is another possibility.
No, it's not. And I think that the status of Marc Gasol is probably going to dictate a lot of things as well. And, you know, Nets fans, obviously, we've wanted Marc Gasol as well. I think that for the semblance of this exercise and for the semblance of whether Serge Ibaka could head to Brooklyn, they should hope that Marc Gasol stays, if anything.
Because there's been a lot of rumors about him signing internationally.
Yeah, and playing for Barcelona or the team that he does own in Spain as well. I mean, if you could play in Spain and earn millions of dollars, dear Lord. To live the life of Marc Gasol. To live the life of Serge Ibaka as well. I mean, he's a gorgeous man and has some great scarves. I don't know. Maybe OG Anunoby's scarves are better. Maybe that's the feud that brings him to Brooklyn, the scarves.
Build it up.
I'm just going to post every day and then at both of them and say, hey, Serge, nice scarf there. And they'll do the next day at OG Anunoby. Hey, OG, nice scarf there. And they're going to like create their own Twitter feud. But
or just post like the best scarf stores in New York City. Like,
true. I reckon the scarves are not, because Toronto's pretty damn cold compared to New York. Maybe that's not the best idea. But we'll get to some other Nets news. And Nick, these new retro jerseys are absolute flames. We saw Kyrie Irving in them. We saw Joe Harris in one. We saw some great social. We've seen that the shorts are freaking sold out. We tried to buy a pair this morning and they're sold out, which is incredibly disappointing for a person like myself. What are you going to be copping? What are your reactions to the new blue, white, and red? It's all the Drazen Petrovic, I guess, sort of jerseys from New Jersey days.
Yeah, 30 years ago, the Nets found a new look, and this was these jerseys. And I feel like this is kind of the Nets showcasing some of their New Jersey love, New Jersey Nets love. And that hasn't necessarily been the case in Brooklyn. We haven't seen a ton of it, so I know a lot of fans were excited from that aspect. The jerseys themselves look beautiful. The secondary logo that the Nets could use with this little Nets logo, too, is nice, too. So, and shout out to the video team for what they did on social with the Brooklyn Nets Twitter account when they dropped that video of putting the current players in these old school jerseys on live feeds, which is not easy to do. So a lot of credit to them for that and making it look as sick as possible. I'm pretty excited about them, and I'm excited to see the Nets in some color on the court, too, because, like, the black and white is great, the gray is great, but it's cool to see some color, especially on the gray court. The blue and red should really pop.
Oh, it'll pop big time. Nick, if you could cop any piece of merchandise with these new colorways, what's it going to be? Is it going to be a player jersey? Is it going to be one of those number tees? What are you hoping to cop? I know I just said about the shorts. We're heading into summer down here in Melbourne, the opposite of what's happening in the Northern Hemisphere up there in America, Canada, and everywhere else. So I really damn want those shorts. At Brooklyn Nets, you've slid in my DMs before when you graciously gave me a ticket to a game for Dwayne Wade's final one. Can you please let me know, give me a notification when those shorts are back? I need them in my life.
Yeah, I mean, Jack, all the stuff looks great. I mean, I already got a KD jersey, but I could get another one. It wouldn't be the worst idea. The shorts do look beautiful. Even the t-shirt, like I said, I really like the logo. It's just like something different from the black and white, just giving you that retro look. Feels like it could go good with a lot of different, like, colorful sneakers. So I think all the gear, the shorts are tough. But I don't know. I have a hard time spending $80 on a pair of shorts. The jersey, $110, I can live with it. But like $80, and especially because you're gonna probably wear them to like the gym or play basketball, I could see them getting ruined real quick. But they are beautiful.
Yeah, I would wear them every single day. I'd wear them to bed. I'd wear them to basketball. I wear them to work. You know, I'll probably get fired. But if I'm looking to fly as I do in those, I didn't just say fly. Let's edit that part out, please, Nick. You do all the work.
This isn't the early 2000s.
No, it's not. It's not. In saying that, it sort of sparked some ideas in my mind. And we know our guy Matt Brooks with Pooch did a really cool episode on his stream, you know, debating the cool sort of historic Brooklyn Nets jerseys. I found one that I put on my Twitter of Julius Erving with the white jersey with the red stripe and the blue stars, which I freaking love. And then there was some cool. Oh man, they're so damn good. And then there was some good responses with the sort of the colorways with the blue on them. I love both of them. I used to have those in the sock version, which those socks are now ruined because I wore them way too much. But yeah, are there any that sort of spring to mind? So from you're obviously a much more historic and long tenured fan than I am.
That New York Nets one, the one that you're alluding to with the white, red, and blue, and the blue down the side with the stars, that's beautiful. I have a Jason Kidd. The Nets used to give away a ton of jerseys when you had season tickets, so I was lucky enough to get one of those. The blue one, the blue version of that is also very nice, but I think you'd only bring back one of them, at least in the course of like 5 years. Then I know a big fan favorite is the gray alternates from the New Jersey Nets. So it's a gray version of that blue one that you see there. I think that'd be pretty popular. The classic blue looks nice too. It just gives you that real New Jersey Nets vibe with Jason Kidd and obviously Richard Jefferson and even some of the Vince Carter days too. So I think really they have a lot of good jerseys for a team that hasn't been super successful the last 20 years.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think I heard people debating on the jump. It's like, you know, do the Nets or it was No Dunks. It's like, do the Nets have the best jerseys for a team that hasn't had much success? And I'm just like, maybe. And to be honest, people might know behind the scenes. I think it was actually on our first episode, you know, us speaking about the origins of our fandom and why we like blah, blah, blah. You know, 300 episodes ago, 3 years. It's literally about 3 years ago to this day. But in saying that, you know, go check that out. That is still on Spotify and iTunes everywhere.
Episode one,
the first ever. I did say that part of the reason why I was drawn towards the Nets was because the black and white is pretty slick, but I am enjoying the color now. And I did also enjoy the memes of, like, you know, the slushies, I'm a big fan of that. And, you know, sometimes a bit of ribbing here and there and memes are going to look great. And I think as well, it suits Kyrie a lot because, like, woke dudes in sort of like tie-dye sort of stuff, It looks so good. I can't wait to see KD in one of them as well. And obviously, my guy, Joe Harris. I think that will be those photos and videos will be saved to my OnlyFans Patreon. Make sure you subscribe to that one as well. It doesn't exist. Let's get on to some coaching stuff, Nick. Phil Handy and Mike D'Antoni. Frank Isola, a reporter for... I think it's The Athletic these days. I don't even know where Frank Isola is these days. But a reputable enough source says that Mike D'Antoni and Phil Handy, tweeted this out, are both potential candidates to join Steve Nash's coaching staff in Brooklyn, according to a source. Now, anonymous sources are aplenty in the NBA circles, NBA reporter circles. We've obviously heard and discussed Phil Handy at length. He won the chip with the Los Angeles Lakers. We spoke about him, I think, on our last news episode.
Yep.
Mike D'Antoni we've brought up before, but we haven't necessarily discussed at length, and we haven't discussed it because there haven't been necessarily credible rumors outside of myself and you and Matt and Nolan sort of bringing them up. Does this bring more credence to that? And I guess discuss with me what you sort of think upon hearing these renewed rumors.
Yeah, I think, you know, Frank Isola, Frank, you know, he has some pretty good takes. I think he works for ESPN now and SiriusXM, and obviously he's part of the YES Network and does some of the halftime shows. I think Phil Handy, like you said, Jack, we talked about a lot. Mike D'Antoni would be very interesting. It's almost to the point where I'd have a hard time seeing him turning down a coaching job to be an assistant coach. Unless
There's no jobs left, though. That's the thing. Because, like, when we did debate it, it was like, you know, he was the number one candidate in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And then Doc Rivers obviously swoops in. Indiana is seeming to be going a different route, and New Orleans is seeming to be going...
I think that he doesn't have interest in Indiana. I think that's what it is.
Okay. And so, I mean, we've sort of seen that the compensation, there is no cap to the assistant coaching ranks. And Joe Tsai his Alibaba stock is doing well. He's earning money in this pandemic. He has shown that he's willing to get deep into his pockets to create a winning culture and winning franchise. Can you see him doing that for a guy like Mike D'Antoni and sort of being like, look, I can't necessarily give you as much as Jacques Vaughn, but I can give you as much as probably what your new coach is getting in Houston. I guarantee Tillman Fertitta is probably giving him like, you know, $20,000 and some stock for some of his restaurants and stuff.
Meal vouchers.
Yeah, exactly. Until Donald Trump gives him some money and some freaking stimulus package. But I guess, Mike D'Antoni, give me your thoughts on MDT.
Yeah, maybe you talk me a little bit more into it because the jobs are drying up and then he's like, hey, I'll be an assistant for a year and then I'll pick up whatever great job opens up next season. I think it's a possibility. There's not many better ads you can have as an assistant coach. You know, offensively, he's one of the best minds in the NBA. He's arguably the reason the NBA offenses are the way they are is because of him and what he did in Phoenix and kind of made all those adjustments and got things cooking. So it'd be an intriguing ad. I think he has probably the respect of Kyrie and KD. And he's just a guy that it seems like a lot of players like because he's a player's coach and he wants to get the best offense out of you. And he doesn't really care much for defense. Wouldn't help the Nets in terms of like adding a defensive identity, but in terms of helping the offense and having that experience, there's not many better guys Steve Nash could have next to him, considering they already have a relationship too.
Yeah, D'Antoni sort of said that he was the coach when we made those remarks when Steve Nash was hired. So the relationship there is incredibly strong. And if the era of collaboration, the buzzword, pardon my pun, the buzzword in Brooklyn seems to be collaboration. You know, Kyrie Irving wants collaboration. KD wants collaboration. Steve Nash wants collaboration. Let's add probably one of the great offensive minds in the history of basketball in Mike D'Antoni. You know, I think with the remaining head coaching jobs, it seems to me that I would like him in New Orleans personally, but I don't know if, you know, Gail Benson is going to be willing to pay what is, you know, probably worth a guy of his stature. Maybe he does take a year off as well, but also at the same time, it's not like he got paid out or fired. So I think that's one thing that I think he's probably going to try and find some work in some respect. And I think that as an assistant coaching job, I don't think he would get more money anywhere else than in Brooklyn, if that does make sense. You know, whether it's low seven figures, high six figures, whatever it is, you know, I don't necessarily can speculate what the numbers are for that. But in saying that, it's and I think as well, the amount of pressure and scrutiny that he has been under in Houston for the last couple of years, to just play back step, back fiddle to a Steve Nash and sort of go, all right, I can sort of help you guys out here or there, or he can't be. Actually, I'll put this to you. Do you think that the Nets get Phil Handy and D'Antoni, or one or the other? What is your preference? What do you think, Nick?
I think they'd love to get both. I think that, you know, you can add two great assistant coaches you definitely want to, and try to make Steve Nash's life easier. And then obviously, like we talked about, some of the relationships these guys already have there, it'd be huge. So, and I think actually thinking about it a little bit more, Jack, I don't even know if any of the other assistant coaching job opportunities would attract him as much. Like, given the opportunity to work with a KD and Kyrie, yeah, you're not the head coach, but you get to work with these guys. He would essentially be the Nets offensive coordinator, and he'd work with a player that he loved in Steve Nash. And I want to say D'Antoni loved being in New York. He maybe didn't love the pressure of the Knicks, but I think he loved being in the city. So having that and having the opportunity to possibly win a championship, obviously you're not the head coach, but you still get a ring and it still counts. So I wouldn't be too surprised, actually, now the more that I think about it. And like you said, Jack, you kind of sold me on the fact that the coaching jobs are drying up pretty quickly, and he just seems like a guy that people aren't going after. And I've just kind of gotten the vibe that D'Antoni's not super interested in the Pacers. And they just – because they're not at that contending level, and they don't necessarily have – no disrespect, Corey – they don't have that excitement to them. You know what I mean? There's just no pop with the Pacers, and it's hard to see them becoming a contender. Even with New Orleans, there's excitement because you got Zion, you got Brandon Ingram, you got all these young pieces. Where can we take this team? How crazy can our offense be? But I don't know. I think it could happen. The Phil Handy one almost seems less likely now, given the Lakers won a championship. But we really don't know where he's at or where his mindset is at. Obviously, this is all kind of rumors and speculation.
Yeah, I think I saw Silver Screen Roll, whatever the Lakers SB Nation account is, like, you know, with the Kevin Hart meme, where the girlfriend is holding him, sort of saying, like, Nets fans, and pushing them away because they're obviously incredibly fond of him, and for good reason. You know, he breeds success. His presence just breeds success, and, you know, the
LeBron James,
players absolutely love him. You know, he was rumored for the head coaching job, like we mentioned plenty of times. Yeah, to me, just thinking about it, Nick, and talking through it with you, it'd just be not weird in a bad way, but it'd be weird that Steve Nash is the head coach, but he has two former head coaches as his assistants. Yeah. And two, like, you know, Jacques Vaughn, you know, did
two
well
guys that were rumored to get jobs this offseason.
Exactly. It'd just be, I mean, weirder things have happened. You know, the NBA is a weird and wacky place, and sometimes for good reason, sometimes for bad reason. So I'm a fan of it. I remember when the D'Antoni rumors were sort of lingering around, I was on that train. I was on the MDT train. I was, you know, I was getting the tickets. I was getting the return tickets as well. I just think that what he can provide offensively and creatively, I think obviously he has a history as well at Team USA with guys like Kevin Durant. So I think that there's an established relationship already there. And you want to surround them with when it comes to assistants, with guys that are... He would be the best, let's put it plainly and simply, he would be the best assistant in the league. Because he's already one of the, he's obviously not a championship coach, but he's probably one of the best non-championship coaches anyway. Yeah. If the Nets get him, he would be the best assistant in the league. And obviously Phil Handy's probably one of those guys as well. There's other guys behind the scenes in Toronto and San Antonio. Becky Hammon is awesome. But Mike D'Antoni has coached, obviously.
A lot of good teams.
Incredible teams. Incredible, revolutionary teams. Obviously haven't had the final success, but... You know, his creative mind, a basketball mind, is almost unparalleled. So we'll certainly be keeping an eye on that. There's no doubt about it. Any final thoughts, Nick, before we move on to some hilarious news about the Bucks wanting Joe Harris?
No, I think just to say, I think, like, you won't see things happen with Phil Handy or D'Antoni until, like, the head coaching jobs fill up, because I think guys still want to hold out the opportunity to possibly get those jobs or at least interview or see what's out there.
Yeah, absolutely. You want to explore all options, and obviously an assistant coaching job isn't the most glamorous role in the NBA, but it's a job nonetheless. And currently, you know, I think all of us, you know, anyone who is lucky enough to be employed in this current unstable climate, let's put it that way, to say the least, you know, it's a blessing in a lot of ways. Yep. I count myself in that for sure. So.
Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility of your hiring. You only pay for what you need and can pause your account at any time. And there's no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job posts, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through September 30th. The wait is finally over. Football is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get on every possible chance to win the season, from game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props. BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, divisions, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today. Take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word, BetOnline, your online sportsbooks experts.
But we'll get to this ludicrous rumor. We mentioned it somewhat on the free agency outlet, which will be dropping or have dropped really, really soon. Make sure you check that one out. I obviously fawned over Joe Harris, the free agent, who should have been ranked number one. But the Bucks certainly, with the compensation that they're willing to offer him, don't think he is a number one sort of guy. Mid-level exception, they had. They like, oh yeah, let's just get the best shooter in the league, the guy who wears headbands better than anyone, the guy who has a glorious beard, the guy who has an awesome bicep celebration. Let's just offer him a mid-level exception, please.
Nick, yeah, this was a joke when I saw it. I don't even know why people even gave attention to it. Just the fact of, like, if the Bucks can offer him the mid-level exception, why would he sign with the Bucks and not sign with, like, the Lakers? You know what I mean? Not sign in L.A. Because if he's signing for the mid-level exception, a team like that's going to want him. A team like the Clippers is going to want him. The Nets are going to end up probably paying like 12 to 15 mil a year for him. Someone's going to push them a little bit further. But the Bucks have, I would say, no chance at signing for the mid-level exception. I don't even give him 1%.
Yep. I would offer him more in terms of the some of the revenue that I've been getting from this OnlyFans and Patreon that I've been doing. You know, please, it's a joke. It's an insult. And no one, whether it's rumors or whatever, or whoever's reporting it, if it's guys in the front office there in Milwaukee, please, guys, you got to get a bit smarter than this. Maybe this is the reason why you didn't win the championship and you're retaining a coach who can't even freaking make adjustments in the postseason. Please, Mike. Please, John Horst. John. Come on, Mike.
I wonder if maybe they were thinking more of a sign-and-trade scenario. That would maybe be something that'd be a little bit more enticing.
Pat Connaughton's a great return, Nick. Give me some Pat Connaughton and a retired Marvin Williams. Come on. Don't make me laugh, mate. Please. I don't need to add anything extra. If you do want some more extra stuff, make sure you dive into the outlet where we discuss Joe Harris free agency at length. And also, my OnlyFans and Patreon, which does not exist. Let's get on to a renewed rumor. I've brought up that before when it came to Mike D'Antoni. It's a renewed rumor with Jrue Holiday as well, Nick. Brian Windhorst on the Hoop Collective pod, he said it, and he also said it in the way where it was like, he didn't say, don't aggregate me, which is what something like Hume, Bill Simmons, Ryan Russillo,
and said it like five times on the podcast about other stuff and not about this one.
He says it all the time, but he didn't say it here. And I'm probably reading into things a little bit too much, but that's what we do when we have a podcast about a team that we love and a guy that has been rumored to this team for a very, very long time. And there are increased rumblings, to say the least, about Jrue Holiday making his way to Brooklyn for some sort of trade package. Now, are your thoughts changed on this at all, hearing this from Brian Windhorst?
No, I think it's kind of almost things that we've anticipated for almost a year now. Like, this Jrue Holiday has been a name we've mentioned for a long time going to the Nets, you know, given it was the last offseason or this offseason talking about him and just the possibility and the fit you would have next to Kyrie Irving. I do think the interesting thing about, like, what they said is, like, oh yeah, the Nets need to include Caris LeVert or Jared Allen. That'd be something that intrigues him. But it's, like, funniest because people are talking about Victor Oladipo, and I'm not saying Oladipo's a better player, but they're like, oh, Oladipo's on an expiring contract. You don't have to pay as much money. Jrue Holiday's on an expiring contract. He has a player option for $27 million in 21-22 when a ton of teams are going to have cap space. I expect him to opt out. So I think the Nets have a little bit more leverage than people are kind of letting on in this situation. Maybe I'm overvaluing the Nets prospects and their picks or whatever it might be, but I just feel like the fact that Jrue Holiday's expiring is an underrated aspect that no one really discusses.
I agree. You know, I think that that's something behind the scenes that you're not going to get anywhere else other than on the Brooklyn Buzz. You know, you're not going to get the smart analysis as well as the ridiculously stupid analysis from a guy like me. That's why we are on a pod together, so we can level each other out. It's why it's lasted so goddamn long, in a good way. Not saying that in a bad way, but yeah, I think that I'm slightly more positive about it because of the fact that when you hear it from a specific source, you know, if it's like the guy who had like 6 followers who posted it, like Lavert is going to be trading.
Yo, I don't understand how people can't spell his name right. He's been in the NBA for a while. He was just popped off in the bubble. Like, spell his damn name right.
Karis Lavert and LeBron James without the capital B. It's dumb.
Resign. Like, that's
yes.
Grinding my gears for a long time.
For people that are a big part of a website that puts out a lot of articles, we have specific things that get on our nerves. But getting back to, I guess, the fact that this came from Brian Windhorst, a guy at ESPN, the guy that's been tuned in with a lot of net stuff as well, relating to Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, these sort of guys. You know, he's a switched on sort of guy. And when he says something, I generally do pay attention. It's not, again, like a guy with 6 followers who can't even spell one of our best players. So to me, it does make me, you know, my eyes open up a little bit. The eyebrows get raised that little bit higher. But I guess in saying that, it doesn't necessarily change my opinion. You know, I think that he would be a perfect fit on this team. We've said that plenty of times. Listen to basically every single pod for the past 2 months if you want to hear us.
The season ended. Yeah.
Yes. Since March, basically. If you want to go back to March, listen to those episodes again. Resubscribe. You know, do what you got to do. We love the numbers and we love all the content and the interaction. But yeah, it does make me raise my eyebrows a little bit more, if that does make sense, Nick.
It makes me feel like there's been conversations already for sure. Like, it's more like there's been details talked about the trade, about some of the works, and maybe it's the Nets sitting there and being like, we know we could probably get Jrue Holiday. Do we want to offer this much for this player?
Exactly.
Or the Pelican side too, waiting on the head coaching thing. You know what I mean? Not having a head coach dictates a lot, because if they get somebody who's less experienced or less known and they're willing to maybe take some time, trading Jrue Holiday makes a lot more sense. If they were to get Mike D'Antoni or a big name head coach, it's more of a win now situation where there's probably a little bit more pressure and you maybe want to keep a veteran like Jrue Holiday and even a guy like JJ Redick, who we mentioned on our previous show.
Absolutely. And again, listen to those trade shows. We've got a lot of evergreen content on the Brooklyn Buzz. So if you're ever stuck for it, it's just like, oh, where is the Brooklyn Nets podcast? Oh, there's no articles. Check out the Buzz. We've got plenty of that stuff. Let's go to a discussion that was had on Twitter a little bit, on Nets Twitter. This was via Brooklyn, BKN711 at Brooklyn Nets 85. Is it a hot take to say I'd trade more for Roko than for Oladipo? And Karis isn't going anywhere near either package, obviously. Now, taking the trade away from it, Nick, who would you prefer? I mean, again, we've spoken it again, both guys on the trade episodes. But Robert Covington, Victor Oladipo, better fit? Who do you want more? Give me your thoughts.
If we're keeping Caris LeVert, it's almost redundant to have Victor Oladipo. You know what I mean? Having another 2-guard, you already have Kyrie at point guard. How many minutes are you going to be able to get for these guys? And I think the organization views Caris very highly. So I think Robert Covington makes a lot more sense because he fills a need. He can play the 4. He can play the 3. He can defend, you know, good players. Like we've kind of mentioned before, he's not necessarily the best on-ball defender, but his off-ball defense is great in terms of helping. And that's something that the Nets will probably need, given that, you know, Kyrie Irving is not a lockdown defender. Caris LeVert is yet to show he can be the defender we think he can be. Spencer Dinwiddie's inconsistent. KD's coming off a torn Achilles. You want to have some of those good help defenders and a guy like Robert Covington, and also a guy who's shown a lot of versatility in, you know, being able to play even the 5, and he's a good 3-point shooter too. So offensively, he knows his role. I think he's good in transition. I love the add of Robert Covington, in which we talked a lot about on the last show.
Yeah, and I think that we know Oladipo is, the rumors are strong that he will not be in Indiana for the long term, but you also do have to pay him in the near term. And what is that contract going to look like?
What does he look like?
What does he look like? Exactly. I've spoken about that on JVT as well. So you can check out OGG Basketball Off the Glass on YouTube for that. But in terms of Covington, I think that there's a way to just let's get some of these Houston guys. You know, yeah. Daryl Morey's not there anymore. So obviously, and Tillman Fertitta, potato, potato, tomato, tomato, whatever you want to call him. I don't pronounce the name, unlike Corey, I deliberately don't pronounce the names correctly of people that I don't like. So Tillman Fertitta, you can target that the assets and players on that roster, because I just don't think that he's going to want to, he's shown like, oh yeah, I'm going to pay in the luxury tax. See you later, Trevor Ariza. Oh yeah, I'm going to do this. See you later, Chris Paul. Or like, so I think that PJ Tucker, Robert Covington, Daniel House, Jeff Green, Ben McLemore, all these role player guys behind Russell Westbrook and James Harden are gettable, I think. And it obviously,
if you're saving money for them in the deal, like if you're taking on the extra $2 or $3 million, they'll love it.
And if you throw some picks their way, because yeah. I don't know, they're almost as bereft as for picks as the Los Angeles Clippers. And that's not a bad thing. That's because Daryl Morey shrewdly went all in and he built the team well. Where Houston lies right now, obviously, is the discussion for another day and for a different episode. But I think that's where Sean Marks can be crafty. And where behind the scenes, he's sending some texts to whoever the new guy is. I can't remember his name. But, you know, I reckon his contact list is very extensive. If he doesn't have his mobile, he's got his email.
And another thing, too, is the coaching situation here. You know, the next coach is probably going to want a center. And Jared Allen's a guy they can make a move for. Obviously, in a dream world, we'd hope it would be DeAndre, but it's not going to be. It's going to be Jared Allen, probably. Jared Allen and Torian Prince might be enough to get you Robert Covington, you know, and then maybe take back some other money in whatever way they want to sell, save money, be it Ben McLemore, be it Daniel House, whatever they want. Maybe you have to put in a first-round pick. Like we talked about off-air, the Nets probably don't really care much about their first-round pick, given that they're looking for a championship this year. So I think Robert Covington's really attainable. I think P.J. Tucker's really attainable. I'd be more intrigued with Covington, just given he has one more year in his deal. I think, obviously, given his age, he's probably in a better spot to continue to play at the level he's playing at. The thing with P.J. Tucker that scares me is he has an expiring deal. There's been a lot of rumblings about him wanting to get a paycheck because he's been taking so many pay cuts. But still, he'll be like, I want to say he'll be like 35 or 36 next year. But still, I'd love both guys. Maybe there's a world the Nets can land both of them.
Yeah, I mean, stranger things have happened. And obviously, the Nets are going to be doing everything to improve. And like I've said a million times, and like I said on the free agent outlet, you know, the Nets need defense. Both of those guys play great defense. And Robert Covington,
a lot of versatility.
Versatility. You know, we need defense. And the Houston Rockets have got some good defenders that the Nets could sorely, sorely use. A guy that thinks he might be, no. Spencer Dinwiddie, our favorite. Your open invitation, Spencer. No response, mate. You know, I got the tequila waiting. This is full of tequila, my guy. I'm holding up a... We're doing too much video stuff. I'm holding up a bottle that is full of water. It's some tequila.
Well, Spencer, just so you know, we can talk about other topics, too. I know a lot about Dragon Ball Z, Dragon Ball Super. I've been getting into the stock market. Not as much about Bitcoin, but, you know...
Yeah, you sway us, man. I'll invest in the crypto.
I'll buy some right.
Whatever you need, my guy. We're here. You know,
we'll give you a free sponsorship on the show.
Everything. You know, we've been doing all right lately. The bus has been doing some decent numbers, but we do some better numbers with you. You could be a co-host. I'll leave the podcast and be a producer if you want to get on. Nick Spencer did when he was on the jump. That's what we were alluding to, and he was saying. He said, obviously, a lot of stuff. It was great to hear that he feels really healthy right now after recovering from COVID. He was saying, obviously, how enthused he is about the Steve Nash hiring. But the one quote that I guess stuck out, and we're going to overanalyze, like I said to some people on Nets Twitter, this is Spencer on his role next season. Obviously, we don't know who's going to start and who's going to come off the bench as of right now. I viewed myself, if we were going to take the Golden State model, as the Draymond Green. The glue. Sometimes I get 10 rebounds. Sometimes I get 10 assists. Nick, is Spencer Dinwiddie the Draymond Green? This is something I feel like I'm on ESPN on first date. What do you think of that comment?
No, I think what Spencer's doing is he's really advocating for a role on the team next year. And he's done this since Media Day last year. You recall, he said a similar thing. We're like, hey, this year I might need to get 10 assists. You know, Kenny asked me to do all different types of stuff. Obviously, Kenny isn't there anymore. But I honestly think Dinwiddie is... able to kind of adapt to different roles. Maybe he'll never be the elite defender that Draymond Green was, but he can kind of fill some of those glue spots with the rebounds, the assists. And I think defensively, he has a lot of potential to up his game. Like, he has the tools to be a good defender. We've seen on occasion, we always point to that Philadelphia playoff series. What comes to mind too is that block on Blake Griffin to end the game. Yep. So I think there's also some versatility being 6'6", being lanky, being a wing, I mean, being a guard. So I don't hate the idea, and I like the mindset from Dinwiddie to be like, hey, I'm willing to do whatever the team needs me to do so we can get this championship. And honestly, it makes me want to keep him on the team more.
It does, especially when you're – and I had this as a topic for previous pods, but I can kind of bring it up now. And we can dissect probably this and a lot of other things on future pods. But you look at the similarities to – non-star players on potential championship teams, and the one that immediately comes to mind is the Los Angeles Clippers. And a lot of people have brought up that comparison point before, which I do understand. You have two superstars who would no doubt deserve and will get preferential treatment, but the mindset of their non-star players, Montrezl Harrell, Patrick Beverley, and Lou Williams, is like, whoa, why are these guys getting all this? Whereas you've heard from Karras, you've heard from Spencer, you've heard from Joe, you've heard from Torian, you've heard from Jarrett, you've heard from every single other guy on the roster that is just like, man, we need to like utilize these guys. We need to make them stand out. We need to make them better. They're going to get us the wins. You know, we're here to make them more successful so they can bring us the success in turn. And that's the mentality that I think that if those players had, then I think that the Clippers probably could have got the chip. Yeah. And I think that locker room dynamics, I said this to you off wax to you and Corey, doesn't totally matter. Unless it is wholly positive or wholly negative. And it was wholly negative in Los Angeles. I think it could be wholly positive in Brooklyn. We've heard nothing but positive stuff from, you know, we've seen great photos. We've seen all these photo opportunities. You know, we've been to games and we've sort of seen guys joking with each other. We've seen Kevin Durant high-fiving himself, which probably isn't the best description and the best indicator.
And Spencer actually mentioned it on the show too.
He said,
this is a quote via Alex Thurum. Obviously, we have Nash, we have Vaughn, we have two guys have won championships and they've been there. And then we have an emotional leader in DeAndre Jordan. So I think the collective, those five, there's enough there to lead the group. So right there, that's something that makes you feel a little bit more confident. And I think, like you mentioned, Jack, the difference in the Clipper situation, the Nets young guys and role players respect Kyrie and KD and understand who they are and how they can help them get to a level that they wouldn't be able to get to without those two. And Lou Will, Pat Bev, and Montrezl Harrell didn't seem like they understood that, especially I would say from Montrez and Lou Will. Pat Bev is always crazy. That's kind of what you expect. He almost needs to be crazy to be good.
Bring him to the Nets. Then I might like him a little bit more, despite the fact that that all of those three have some. I mean, I like Lou Will. I got nothing bad to say about Lou Will, but Montrez, Pat Bev, Marcus Morris, those guys I could speak about for days about some negative things. But I think it's positive to hear. And I do, and focusing, I guess, on Dinwiddie, the player, like you sort of mentioned, Nick, I do think there is potential in areas of his game that you sort of said that haven't been utilized yet, you know, and we've probably seen him be maybe Brooklyn's most malleable player.
Yeah.
He's just like, all right, we
just
need
look
you
at his
to be
roles from when he started to where he's at.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like, all right, you got to be our best player now. Cool. I'll be our best player. All right, Spence. Sorry. You got to be the sixth man now. All right. I'll be the sixth man now. You need to create for others. All right. I'll be second in the league or lead the league in assist to turnover ratio. Now, is it going to be, we need you to be the best defender on the team? Maybe. And I'm not discounting it. Obviously, we're going to be more optimistic as Nets fans. And, you know, obviously, we've criticized, you know, Spencer Dinwiddie has time for his defense. And I think at times because he's had to do too much. But Kenny, obviously, I think, saw something in him as a defender and, you know, gave him key assignments in games like you mentioned, Blake Griffin and other games in Philadelphia as well. So who knows? Anything can happen. And
he's
like
fast,
you said,
too.
He's quick. He's got good lateral quickness, which is something that's important in defense. He's strong, underrated strong, has underrated strength, you know, going up against a guy like Blake Griffin, going up against a team like the Sixers and showing great defensive acumen. I'm all in on Spencer Dinwiddie for Defensive Player of the Year candidacy. You know, I said he was going to win Sixth Man of the Year last year or the year before. Now it's the Defensive Player of the Year. I've got to get that article written down. But yeah, these comments are good. And again, Spence, at OTG Nick, at the J-Man JBT, we'll get the Tequila Gong guy. We'll send it to you. We'll Postmates it. We'll Deliveroo, whatever it is that you guys have over there that are alcohol delivery services. Again, we're all 21 here. You know, we're all adults and we'll have some fun.
just touch on that though real quick. I think as an off-ball defender with his speed, it provides so much value. And just given how much screens are such an impactful part of today's game, I feel like that's one area where he probably could get better, is in avoiding screens or kind of like trying to create a little bit more contact. But like you mentioned, having such a big workload, you don't want to exert that type of energy on the defensive end. In a lesser load, hey, he might be able to turn into a really good defensive player. Don't expect him to be Jrue Holiday, but I think that he could uptake his game from being maybe average to slightly below average to being above average to good.
Yep. And the Nets need, again, like we've said, and we've mentioned on this pod a lot, we need good defense next season.
You know, and I think hustle plays.
Yep. I think the offense is going to be okay. I think that it should be fine. Nick, to one of our final topics, this one has been lingering around a little bit, and I wanted to touch on it because we don't just touch on the star superstars on these pods. The Justin Anderson and Chris Joza were speaking to Alex Schiffer of The Athletic, and they were talking about, I guess, their free agency and off-season sort of mindset and prospects, and this is what Justin Anderson said. It's too much going on. Season's still happening. We're not in true off-season. Rules haven't been made. There's just so many things. Right now, for me to even think about that, we talk about all the time, you know, control what you can control. For me to worry about what if I'm going to be on a training camp or if I'm going to be on the team is something that I can't waste my time thinking about right now. And Chioza added, I'm pretty certain that I'll find somewhere. I'm not really thinking about it too much. I take it day by day. Just focusing on what I can control. Free agency isn't something I can control. I'm just going to let everything play out and hope for the best. We both hope that these guys find roles, whether it's with Brooklyn or beyond, because we're massive fans of Justin Anderson and Chris Joza at the Buzz.
Yeah, no, both guys worked really hard to get to this spot and be where they are and have an opportunity to play in the NBA. I feel a little bit more confident Chris Joza getting a job. Justin Anderson's kind of already had a little bit of a run around the NBA, so teams kind of have an idea of who he is, unless he drastically improves. I think he'll be kind of trying to catch at the end of a roster, maybe get a training camp deal, or maybe he's a guy that the Nets sign if they, you know, make a huge deal and they need to fill out the roster. Chioza, I think, really has shown the playmaking ability that has enough to entice a team and be like, this is a skill that actually is really valuable in the NBA. Obviously, defensively, Chioza is a major question mark with his size. Jump shot, lack of confidence offensively is an issue, but I think there's enough promise and potential where a team will probably take a chance on him, and it could be the Nets. If they do end up trading Spencer Dinwiddie or Caris LeVert and they want to add another guard, Chioza would be a guy that KD likes. He's familiar with the system and familiar with the other players, and you wouldn't necessarily have to depend on him to a high extent, especially because one of the players that's added is likely a guard.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. I thought Justin Anderson was good in his spurts in Orlando. I like the willingness to take the three-pointer, you know, maybe a bit five foot a little bit too deep sometimes, but I think that he still has something to offer. And
if he can get that three-point shot to where he is consistently like a 36 or 37% three-point shooter, he'll easily have a spot in the NBA because of, like you said, Jack, the energy and the defense and the other stuff he provides, that's never in question. It's like, can you not be a net negative offensively, which he's been most of his NBA career?
Yeah, and I think, you know, it feels like to me if Daryl Morey and Mike D'Antoni were still in Houston, he feels like a guy that they would take a flyer on, make him take five threes a night and just rebound the ball and play some small ball five for them probably. Yeah. You know, make it a little bit easier for PJ Tucker. And yeah, Chris Chioza, you know, we love Chai Chai, we love cheese on this pod, and he obviously has the highlights, and you know, the consistency in the bubble wasn't great. He was given some more opportunities. Obviously, there are some pronounced weaknesses in his game, but like you said, he does have enough skill, enough talent that I think he can be on an NBA roster, you know, 12 to 15 or whatever it might be. Heck, if Campaign can revitalize himself and, you know, turn himself into like a sort of backup guard and six-man.
Yo, Campaign looked nice in the bubble.
Exactly. I think he's going to be on the Phoenix Suns and produce for them. So it certainly, you know, makes me a bit more optimistic about a guy like Chris Chioza. So
I think Chioza has to get a lot stronger. He's so undersized, he has to have like that Fred VanVleet strength where like, yo, I'm undersized, you're 6 inches on me, but you still ain't moving me. And we just saw Chioza get moved way too much. Some of that's the Nets defense not protecting him, but some of that's just on him not being strong enough to be, you know, an everyday NBA player.
Absolutely. Nick, we'll finally touch on and finish with Kyrie Irving, the locker room cancer. Kyrie Irving, the disruptor. No, sorry, actually, it's Kyrie Irving continuing to contribute to the local community. So, and this is via Scoop B and some others. He saved his high school alma mater from closing down by donating money to keep them afloat. Al Harrington on Kyrie Irving. Kyrie is the one that saved the Patrick School. I'm going to give him credit where credit's due. I make my small contributions to help out, but he's the one. Now, we see all of the BS, and like I said, we're going to give Kyrie the credit where credit is due. We're also giving the criticism where criticism is due. We try to be as objective as possible on this pod for a team-based pod, but we're not going to call out. We are going to give him the credit for this because it's just awesome. You know, the amount that he has done for so many different causes, it just seems to me that how much do you need for your actions to speak louder than your words?
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, that's a saying that all of us sort of believe in. And while Kyrie Irving says some dumb stuff and some controversial stuff on some podcasts and some Instagram lives, look at what he's doing for the community. Look at, like, the behaviors. Look at the actions. Look at the money. Look at the contributions. Surely that has to be like, oh, nah, it does a discount from calling the earth flat. I mean, I was highly critical of that on all, you know, podcast platforms that I was on when I was starting off with OTG. But now it's just like, okay, that's just a dumb comment that a kid made. And what actually matters is
what he actually hinted at it being part of like a marketing ploy for Uncle Drew.
I still don't think, I still think that that might have been an excuse, but I don't care about it. It, like, to me, it doesn't matter. What matters is what you do, putting your money where your mouth is, putting your influence where your mouth, where you can. And he's done that in so many freaking ways that we could do an entire podcast about it.
Yeah, I agree, Jack. And it's fine. Like, you want to talk shit about Kyrie when he says something dumb or does something bad or disrespects a teammate or says something bad about a coach, whatever. That's fine. But you have to give him credit when he does something great. And saving a school is a pretty big deal. You know what I mean? And we've talked about a lot of the great things he's done, especially with the WNBA and allowing players who sat out and giving them money so they could live their life and not have to feel to be in a pressure situation. Obviously, everything he's done for the Black Lives Matter movement and everything he's done in terms of the NBA and having the role that he has in the player association. So I think Kyrie just needs some respect, especially for some of the real life-changing things he's doing off the court. On the court, whatever. Criticize him all you want, but off the court, he's really been amazing the last 2 years and probably more than we even know for the previous years because he doesn't necessarily talk about it.
Yeah, it just seems to me that we give, I mean, I'm not going to, like, I agree with him somewhat saying we live in a clickbait society, but I also agree that he sometimes creates that clickbait himself. But I also think that we need
to realize that he's like a star player and such an icon. Like, he thinks that he should be treated like everybody else, but that's just never going to be the case when you're that big of a star.
No, and that's fine. You know, that comes with the paycheck. Unfortunately, some people, you get the preferential treatment, you get the big dollars. What you say is going to be dissected to the minute degree. Every little word, how you say it, when you say it. You know, when Kyrie Irving, after a poor game against the Philadelphia 76ers in a loss, and he, you know, rattled off a heap of names and didn't mention certain players, we dissected that. We criticized him for it, but we also think things that are bigger than basketball, especially now, Nick, especially now, when people are struggling, be it schools, be it people in their livelihoods, be it food, whatever it is, we need to be more uplifting towards people in society that are doing the good. You know, LeBron James freaking had opening a school and his voting initiatives. All of the people that are doing great things in the NBA and beyond, obviously, you know, we are a basketball podcast, but there are people beyond that are doing so much more that don't get the credit that they deserve. Kyrie Irving is a guy that just doesn't get, I don't think, any credit, you know, or maybe some.
Like, if you ask the casual NBA fan, they would say that Kyrie's a bad person. Like, yes. I don't think that would be an uncommon take. Like, but if you actually study him and, you know, follow him on a regular basis or to the extent which we do on the Buzz or most Nets fans do, you realize the general good that he does off the court for people. And he really, like you said, Jack, in a time like this, you need to appreciate that a little bit more because it'd be very easy for him not to do it, especially with the way that people critique him and give him such a hard time. If he was just like, hey, I'm going to hold on to my own money, give it to my kids and my family, F everybody else, like, I wouldn't blame him. And that's not a bad thing. Like, you can't blame anybody if they do that. But the fact that he's so generous with his money just showcases what type of person he really is.
I said this on the NBA outlet. I'll say it now. He wants his damn respect too, to quote his former team. And he deserves it. You can disrespect him for things that are disrespectful, but you should respect him for things that are beyond respectful. This is beyond respectful. This is generous and just so many good ways and so many good things that he does. Again, actions speak louder than words. It's a saying that we are taught since we're in primary school and preschool.
Yep.
You know, you do good things and good things happen to you and you'll get credit for them. Unless, I guess, you're Kyrie Irving and some other people. But, Nick, that's all I got now. We stretched out this news pod. We probably could have split this one into two, but you guys have got a nice bumper one for you.
Yeah. All right, Jack, as always, a pleasure. Big thanks, everybody, for listening. You can find us on all streaming platforms.